Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. Today's show is a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juno. I'm your host, Christina Michelle, and today I am joined by our guest, Brian Compton, Chantel Webb Candler, and Brandon Williams. We are talking about HBCUs, and this is a show that we have been waiting for. Welcome to our guests.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
Brandon, we'll start with you.
Sure. My name is Brandon Williams. Everybody know me as P-Nut. I'm a class of 2010 from the Tuskegee University. My major was biology. I have a master's in sports psychology, as well as I'm a member of not one, but many organizations. I'm a member of Alpha Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. I'm also a member of Alpha Omega Service Fraternity Incorporated. I also am a Trojan. Fight on.
Thank you, Brandon. Would you prefer to be called Peanut?
That's fine. Peanut's fine.
Okay. We'll go with that. And Chantel?
Chantel Webb Candler, born and raised in San Diego, California. Class of 2008 of the illustrious Clark Atlanta University. I was a political science major. I also attended the University of San Diego. My paralegal there in the realm of business litigation. I currently am in a graduate program to be finished, hopefully in the next year or so. A little bit about me, I am a paralegal. I wear many hats. I also have a nonprofit that specializes in HBCU advocacy here in San Diego, California. We've been running strong as a group since the end of 2014, but we've been a nonprofit since 2018. I am also the team market owner of a professional basketball team called the San Diego Guardians. We're going into our inaugural season in about 3 weeks within the basketball league, which is the first professional sports league for men in the country that was founded by a Black woman. So I can explain a little bit more because we actually have an initiative that's going that benefits HBCUs. So I can talk about that a little bit later on in the segment.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Chantel. Brian?
Well, I'm Brian Compton, born and raised in Los Angeles, California. I'm a Tiger by travels. I attended Northeast Louisiana from 1989 to 1992, where I then became the ultimate Gremlin Tiger, where I transferred there from spring 92. And left in spring of 95. I later went on to become an entrepreneur. I am currently an owner of All That and some Greek Warehouse and Showroom, where we specialize in D9 fraternity and sorority wear, as well as carry the line and apparel for all the historically Black college and universities by being a Grambling Tiger. I was put into that particular facet of the business through also being a member of Phi Beta Sigma Incorporated, which you'll hear that next week on the segment that we just did previously. But that's how I pretty much got intertwined and into what I do in regards to my HBCU travels and my HBCU Black experience. So hopefully we can help you guys today answer some questions that you have in regards to our great universities that all three of us have attended.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brian. So let's just talk about the weather really quick because we're on Zoom right now. So I don't know what's happening where you guys are, but we've been having some very temperamental weather. It's, 40, 45 degrees here. And then the next day it's 18 degrees. What's it doing where you are?
Yeah, we're at 61 here in San Diego. It's temperamental as it was a little cloudy today, and based on my forecast, it looks like we have 80% chance of rain tomorrow. So, I'm so excited.
No,
see how California people see how we get so excited about rain because we never get it.
Right.
Oh no, that was pure sarcasm. I am not excited. I'm excited at the fact that I'm working from home, and school is from home, so I don't have to go out in it. But Californians, because it doesn't rain here, a little drop mixed with that oil that's on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A
catastrophe real quick.
Can't forget the oil. Yeah, Christina knows she stayed down there before, too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I lived in California for 12 years, And I mean, you have, like you said, one little drop of rain and it's a potential disaster. Like, it just shut down.
People like literally.
Oh, I can't go because it's raining. I'm like, you can't go. Like, you have to, like, your life has to still go on. And yeah, crazy. Raincoats and rain boots and all of that stuff. You don't see that here in Alaska.
What's that?
Right, exactly.
I don't know what those are.
Exactly. The worst freeway, especially on the 405. You don't not want to be in the rain on the 405 and the 110 freeway.
At all. Negative.
Ain't that the truth?
Well, let's get into our conversation about the HBCUs. I am very excited about this. And if you can just say your name when you're speaking, and so our listeners can just start to get familiar with your voice. But I'll just open with the first question, I guess the obvious question, what does HBCU stand for? Who would like to take it? Chantel?
Go ahead.
Historically Black Colleges and Universities.
Okay, there we have the first question answered. So what's the big deal about HBCUs from your perspective? Like, what's the significance?
So for me, the significance of HBCUs is that not long ago, contrary to popular belief, when African Americans were enslaved, we were not able to read, let alone get an education. So it was pretty much a death sentence if we were caught with a book in our hand or trying to seem any type of educated or articulate or anything of that matter. So HBCUs were established. Some of the first were actually established prior to the Civil Rights War ending, or excuse me, the Civil War ending. Mm-hmm. And then after the Civil War ended and the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, there was a slew in 1865 of HBCUs that were established, but there were specifically three HBCUs that were established prior to 1865.
Okay.
Like I said, essentially, for me, in my opinion, the significance of them is that they were the, I guess you would say, birthright or birthplace of African Americans being able to receive an education, because essentially there were some HBCUs, you had different ones at different stages. So there were some that actually had elementary and secondary, like high school and then post-high school education, all coupled in one, and then they went on to the collegiate level and stuff like that. So they were essentially where all of our, what I like to say, all of our pioneers were educated for the most part. I mean, you know, when you hear HBCUs, you think about Martin Luther King, you think about Katherine Johnson and all the women that were depicted in Hidden Figures. You think about, oh God, W.E.B. Du Bois. I mean, the list goes on. So all of our idols, essentially, that we look up to, whether it be the Civil Rights Movement, inventors, et cetera, they came out of HBCUs. So I think that that is a very important thing to know. When you have some times that you hear people trying to discredit HBCUs, you're discrediting our history and our idols and our forefathers in this movement of civil rights and et cetera, Black excellence.
Yes.
You better go on with that history, I see.
Yeah, she nailed it.
You better come on with that history. But I mean, realistically too, HBCUs gave us people of color, and not just us people of color, people of diversity, a chance. Mm. And a chance to get educated and a chance to move on within the future and a chance to go do great things. I mean, let alone we have, you know, from our earliest HBCUs, which is Cheney, which was founded in Pennsylvania. They were founded prior to the Civil War. So just imagine a Black college founded before the Civil War had started. And with the earliest HBCU, I believe it was Mississippi Valley was the last HBCU to be founded. But, you know, you have great pioneers, even in sports, where a lot of our athletes couldn't attend, for example, the University of Alabama, couldn't attend definitely University of Georgia, some of these other predominantly white institutions for football. They had a chance to go to Grambling State University and thrive. Andy Robinson was the most pioneer coach in Black college history. He let alone educate his athletes to not just propel his sports, but to propel in the classroom as well as academia. And of course, we have different cultures at our Black colleges. Each one of our campuses have a different culture. Each one of our campuses have a legacy. Like, for example, Tuskegee, we were the first Black college to actually have a veterinary medicine program. So we graduated some of the top vets in the country, about 70%. Of course, we have the Tuskegee Airmen. We have, you know, didactics with NASA, and the list goes on and on.
Okay, thank you, Peanut. Brian, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Their presentations were both extraordinary. I mean, they answered a lot of the meat. And I think another thing that we just addressed, I mean, it's right there in the abbreviations, HB, Historically Black. And the fact that these were institutions at the time, because of the times that we as Afro-Americans had specifically for us, because those were the only opportunities at the time set aside for us to get an education. And the thing about it is the fact that that was our culture. The education driven was for us because we were shorthanded. I mean, even now, the HBCU still haven't got the full representation that they should in comparison to other colleges and universities. And that's not a knock against them because of world events going on around. And HBCUs now are getting, I would say, due just attention. I mean, it's still a lot that we're deserving of, not because we just feel we're special. It's just the fact of the type of product that we put out as far as graduates and the changes that HBCU graduates and attendees make in our communities and our surrounding areas, wherever we are fortunate enough to be planted. And that's what we represent. That's what we're shooting for. That's what we stand for. So great answers, you guys.
I'm pretty sure we have all seen it's not a meme, but more of a stat chart of that HBCUs are responsible for 75% of Black PhDs, 46% of Black business executives, 50% of our engineers, 80% of our Black federal judges in the United States of America, 85% of our doctors, 50% of attorneys, 75% of Black military officers. And me living here in San Diego, I've been blessed to meet, oh my God, probably all of them. And most of them come out of Savannah State, at least that are here stationed in San Diego. 40% of our Black dentists, 50% of pharmacists, and 75% of veterinarians going to what Peanut spoke about, to ski.
Wow. I'm going to need a copy of those stats so I can post them on
our email page.
Thank you. Did you always know that you would go to HBCU, or was there a point that you made that decision?
No. Going to a Black college from California was not my first choice. Growing up in LA, and from my time around the 2000s, either wanted to go to USC, UCLA, mm-hmm. Stanford, Berkeley, or some of the Cal State schools.
Yeah.
So going to a Black college was not really my first choice. But what changed my perspective was attending the Black College Expo in 2001. So I was a sophomore, freshman that year. I attended the Black College Expo all 4 years of high school. It was free, and I was part of the Black Student Union at my high school, which was 99% Hispanic. So I was one of 15 African-Americans in my class. Three of us attended Black colleges. But, you know, my senior year, I walked in with my transcripts, my senior portfolio, and Tuskegee was the first one. I walked up, handed them my stuff, and was like, oh, you're in. You're good. So I started, you know, got accepted to other HBCUs, but I didn't know about Black colleges. And see, back in the day, BET used to show the Black College game. So they showed the Tuskegee Morehouse Classic. And of course, you watch the Bayou Classic every year. It was from there on, it was between going to Cal State Northridge or going to Tuskegee. And I talked to my grandmother, was like, go back to the South. Go learn about your roots.
Yes. That's where I met. Chantel, how about you?
So I have a very interesting story. So when I was in school, I was in an AVID program, and my best friend in school, her name was Chantel. My name is Chantil. And so we were always swearing that we would go off to college together, et cetera, et cetera. And in our AVID class, we had to do a research project on schools, like based on our interests, so where we would want to go to school based on our interests. And so it was her idea. She was like, we're going to go to this Black school called Clark. And I was like, oh, and she was like, yeah, I think it's in Georgia. So we went and did, like, of course, so I was going to save it to the end, but this is in seventh grade, right? So this is late 90s. So we had AOL, you know, dial up, and we found Clark University. However, it was Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts. We looked at the pictures and we were like, nah, that's not it. And so I think we typed in probably, because I think that's what she said, oh, I think it's in Georgia. So we either typed in Georgia or we typed in Black or something. And then that's when the lovely Clark Atlanta University popped up. And at the time, and still do, one of my loves and passions is writing. And anybody that really knows Clark Atlanta, we have an extensive mass media arts program. And so that drew me to it. And there I was in the seventh grade at Lemon Grove Middle School at the age of 12. And I said I was going to Clark Atlanta. And I did not depart from that. When I was in high school, I was also a part of, well, ours was the African American Student Union, but same purpose as BSU. My class of 2004 was roughly 980 students. 33 of us were Black. We had only a few Black teachers at my high school, but we were fortunate to have a Black assistant principal, and she had four children. Her oldest, her son, was at went to Howard. Her daughter went to Spelman. Her middle daughter was at PSC at the time, and then her youngest daughter was the same age as me, and she ended up going to SC. However, so my first trip was to Fisk University, and my mom tried to kind of push that off because it was a small school. And I was like, that's not where I'm going. So I knew at 12 and I stuck to it to go to Clark Atlanta. And then we used to have the Gold Coast Classic here in San Diego. So that my senior year, I was a part of the pageant, the scholarship pageant, a little stage fright. And Clark Atlanta and Stillman actually were that year. So then I really got to see kind of the first time what Clark Atlanta culture was. But yeah.
Thank you. And Brian, you went to an HBCU and then you went to another university. Can you share a little bit about what led you to those experiences?
Well, my travels were detoured. My whole experience was my mother was an educator. She was a teacher and principal, and she graduated from Grambling State University. Her father, my grandfather, he attended Southern University of Baton Rouge. That was an in-house rival right there from the jump, because Grambling State and Southern University are like two of the biggest HBCU college rivals in the game. When we get to Peanut and them school and Clark and all them, that's a whole nother can of worms, because they got rivals too. That's like major. So for me growing up, I was exposed to Grambling State, really more or less Grambling State, because of my mother. And so that's all I would hear was Grambling. Growing up, she graduated from Grambling. My mother and father are both originally from the Deep South, from Evergreen and Bunky, Louisiana, which are sticks. No disrespect, but they were in the woods. And so just by me going back and forth to the South from California, where I was born and raised, and traveling to the South back and forth, I mean, I was just introduced to the lifestyle. I just fell in love with the South. And now to speed up to high school, I went to a predominantly white high school in Cerritos, California, and there was a handful of us Afro-Americans there. And I graduated, and even then, I had no exposure to HBCU knowledge other than my mom and going back and forth to the South and experiencing for myself and seeing like the Grambling and Southern Gang, the Bayou Classic. So I was pretty much just programmed like that, but it was voluntarily because I mean, kind of just knowing that was it. So when I graduated, I only applied to one school. I knew I was going to Grambling. That was it. Like, I didn't even know about other HBCUs, really, to be honest with you, until later in the game. I mean, all I knew was Grambling State. That's where I'm going. I saw step shows. I saw Greek life. Fortunately, we still don't know to this day, other than it was God's plan. But I did not get in. And I'm telling you, I had the grades and everything. And so that's where the Northeast portion came in. I ended up attending Northeast Louisiana from 1989 to spring of 92, where I fell in love with that campus. That was a predominantly white campus. But that is also where I was introduced to the Greek fraternity and sorority lifestyle, which I later, on that yard, I joined Phi Beta Sigma Incorporated. And that was the introduction to the fraternal side. And then in spring 91, I finally was able to transfer to Grambling State in the spring of 92. And the rest was history. I never looked back. I stayed on the yard. I'm, you know, a Tiger to this day. My mom's a Tiger. And I shared an HBCU experience with our fellow guests as well, Brandon and Chantel, because we're a family. Even though we didn't all go to the same colleges, just by us being attendees of HBCU colleges, there's like a mutual respect for the experience that we all endeavored going on these different campuses. So when I tell you, like, it's unique, that's my travel. That's how I ended up. Grambling State for life on mine.
Thank you. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get deeper into this conversation. We'll be back in just a moment.